in the Torah itself. If I have a machlokus of what to do if the two of us Okay. Well, today we'll finish Ibn Ezra. Next week we'll do the Ramban. We're on page 4, and we were in the middle of Ibn Ezra's approach to Midrashim and various Kabbalahs of Chazal. We referred last week to the fact. Okay. Well, today we'll finish Ibn Ezra. Next week we'll do the Ramban. We're on page 4, and we were in the middle of Ibn Ezra's approach to Midrashim and various Kabbalahs of Chazal. We referred last week to the fact that Ibn Ezra was very much prepared to question methodically any Midrash in Chazal which he felt didn't have a Kabbalah. And he always concluded by saying, in Kabbalah nikabel, Kabbalah to this Midrash, then I'm willing to accept it. If not, I can't imagine that this Midrash should be taken as the meaning of the pasuk, the simple meaning of the pasuk, or that it's historically true, unless, and he usually concludes with this, there's some kind of sod, some kind of secret that I don't understand to this explanation. So now we dealt with last week the character of Nimrod, how many people left Egypt. We dealt with the age of Yitzchak at the Akedah. And we dealt with the trees that Bnei Israel used to construct the Mishkan. Now let's discuss the age of Yocheved when Moshe was born. Take a look on page 4. It's Bereishis Mem Zayin Pasuk Chaf Gimel. Bereishis Mem Zayin Pasuk Chaf Gimel. Okay. First, let me ask you if something like this bothers you. The Torah says that 70 people went into Egypt from Canaan. And when you count them, you have 69. Now, there are various ways to solve this discrepancy between 69 and 70. There's a famous approach to solving the problem found in Rashi, found in the Gemara in Yesh Nochlin, that the 70th person was Yocheved, who was born Bein HaChomos. This medrash is based on the fact that where it describes Yocheved's birth, it says that she was born in Mitzrayim, And the drusha is she was born but not conceived in Mitzrayim. Okay, she made up the 70th person. Okay, now that is a problem because if Moshe was 80 when they left Egypt and they spent 210 years in Egypt, then that would make Yocheved very old when Moshe was born. 130, you figure it out. Okay, so that's found in this parish of Ibn Ezra. Take a look. Bnei Dan Chushim. Okay. If you look at the number 10, you see the second line, the number 10. Yesh Omer. Everyone following with me? The second line in Ibn Ezra, where I have in my handwriting on top, age of Yocheved when Moshe was born. Yesh Omer ki mispar shivim ba'avur shehusach cheshbon ki shishim v'teisha haya. People point out that the number 70 is contradicted, there's a discrepancy with the number 69. It's not even a problem. See, what is Rashi's approach? Rashi says, I am here to lefarish pshuto shel mikra, ula agadah miyashev es divrei mikra. Pshat doesn't cut it for me, Rashi says, I will resort to drash. So, I have no pshat here. It says 69 and it says 70 and you count, there's 69. Ibn Ezra says, don't resort to drash. You know why there are only 69? Because Yaakov is the 70th. There's B'shivim Nefesh Yodu Avostecha Mitzrayim, the 69 descendants of Yaakov, and Yaakov made up the 70th. That's it. So Ibn Ezra says, why look for Terutzim that are going to lead you to other problems of Yocheved being 130 when Moshe was born, when there's a simple solution in the text itself? If you have a kasha, Ibn Ezra will bring this kasha in. Okay. So whoever says that this give the 69 to 70 is a mistake because there's a simple solution. Okay, uvedrash ki Yocheved nolda ben achomos. I'm on the fourth line. The drash that Yocheved was born at that time, gam zet tamal I object to that, Ibn Ezra says, because if you say that Yocheved was born as they got into Egypt, that would make her 130 when they left. And if the Torah makes a big deal about a 90-year-old woman giving birth, why did it pass over the fact that a woman of 130 gave birth? Now, when Ibn Ezra questions this, those who do accept that she was 130, namely Rashi, Ramban, right? Rashi says, Vayilach ish mi beis levi v'yikach es bat levi. Bat levi implies a return to youth, a rejuvenation. Amram was he was once again enamored with his wife of old age, and he took her back. This is all found in Rashi and that pasuk. So the Ramban and Rashi who accept this have to answer for us, why then didn't the Torah write about this great miracle if it made a big deal in Bereishis about Sarah at 90 giving birth? That will be a discussion for next week when we do the Ramban. However, the Ibn Ezra, like his Shita, questions this. Okay? But lama hiskir dvar Sarah shaysa bas tishim. If it made a big deal about Sarah, why didn't it say anything about Yocheved? Velo dai lanu zehat sa'ar. That's not enough. Sa'ar, to me, called a sa'ar, that they say she's 130. Ad she'asu paitanim piyutim biyom simchas Torah Yocheved imi acharei snachami v'hi bas reishnun shana. They're the paitanim. Remember what I said last week about Ibn Ezra with piyut? He was very much against writing piyut for people who don't understand what's being written. That's in Kohelis Perakei. The piyutim say she was 250 when Moshe was born. Gibbon. Okay, so that he calls this all of Derech Haggadah, and he says that Yaakov makes up the 70. That's all. And there's one kasha to this, by the way. Can you think of a pasuk in the Torah that gives the kasha to Ibn Ezra's statement? So if you want to say that Yaakov made up the 70th person, there's a kasha, because in Shmos, in the beginning of Shmos, it says that they were Shivim Yotze'ei Yerech Yaakov. 70 descendants of Yaakov precludes this answer. He says that Yaakov made up the number 70. Yaakov is not the descendant of himself. Okay, so Ibn Ezra gives the teretz there because it says, B'shivim nefesh yodu avosechel mitzrayim. He says that's a whole mistake, because even if you discount Yaakov, there was 66. Yaakov, Yosef might have gone down to Egypt. That's true. But Menashe and Ephraim never went down to Egypt. They were born in Egypt and died in Egypt. Okay, so that's, Ibn Ezra points out that if you want to bring a raya against me from this pasuk, then the pasuk is a raya against other things also. In no place do we have 70 people going down to Egypt. Okay, because the 70 include Ephraim and Menashe. So it's a problem anyway. So how does he solve it? He says that it's rounded off. Did you ever hear this before? Okay, the Rosh at the end of Pesachim says that this is found in three places in the Torah where a 9 is rounded off to the next 0. This is one, the 69 is rounded off to 70. The other two, can you think of? Abim Yakenu with 39. Now, the one who says that has a very strong reliance in the Torah Shebaal Peh, because there is no reference in the Torah to 39 Malkus. Okay, but it's still a drash. There's no question that you have to take a shovel to get that, not a spoon. I mean you have to delve, you have to dig, you have to doresh this out, right? By the way, there's a Gemara in Makkos that says, how foolish are some people? They stand for a Sefer Torah, but they don't stand for an Adam Gadol. Why is there more reason to stand for the Adam Gadol? The Gemara says, because the Torah says hit him 40 times, the Adam Gadol says to hit him 39 times, and who do we listen to? Right, so that Gemara took it that the pshat is 40, right? So that's the second. The third one is Sfiras HaOmer, where the Torah says 49 in 7 weeks, and it's Knapa Fifchik. It's the Torah calls it 50. So that's the point. The Torah is just rounding off. I know there are drushas on all this, and Taisvus and Menachas and Rashi Ala Torah figures out why it should say 50. But the Rosh didn't play games. The Rosh is a very, very strict Pashtun also. And Ibn Ezra gives the same teretz here. Okay, that 69 or 67 even was rounded off to 70.
Okay. Simply there's a calculation. Tosfos, knowing pi, says that the Gemara is incorrect. So they said, Lo God, they just gave you a round number.
Correct.
They're not interested in doing that.
So absolutely. Remember, I might have mentioned this one time in a different context here, but there's a place in Tanakh where pi is rounded off. In one of the designs in the Beis HaMikdash, it's 30 amos around and 10 amos across. So you can say that the diameter was a little higher or lower. It was an arc, not a diameter, so it wasn't... But it's, so you have it less than pi. But then that doesn't make sense because the designs should be perfect designs. So the Gra points out on that pasuk that there's a kriyuksiv. The word for diameter in the pasuk is kav, but the ksiv has it as if though it's kuf vav hey, kava. But the word is kav. Kav means line. That's the word for diameter. So the Gra, and who else but the Gra can figure this out? He takes the number, the pi in the pasuk is 3, a 10 and 30. The ksiv is kuf vav hey, which is gematria 111. The kri is gematria 105. Anyone here have a calculator watch? If you do, do this please. Take 111 divided by 105, right, times 3, and read out the number. Out loud. 3.17? You sure you got it right? No, it's not. It's pi to 7 decimal points. It's kava, kuf vav hei, which is 111, divided by 105, times 3. 111 divided by, not times, but divided by 105, times 3. Now what do you get? Is still 3.17? I'll figure it out here afterwards. But 333 divided by 105 is, unless your watch is rounding it off, is 3.14159. It goes on and on. I tried it. Anyway, we'll do it afterwards. The Torah. What? You're getting 3.14?
No, 3.171428.
Then I'm just... Oh, I'm sorry. Kav is 106, not 105. Just do this one last time. 111 divided by 106 times 3. Divided by 106 times 3. I did 105.
It's 1.1415.
Okay, so that's more like pi. Okay, so the Gra pointed out... Okay, I'm sorry. I did kava over kufhei, not kuvav. So the Gra showed that it's all there. If you want to doresh it, it's there. But on face value, the Tanakh is going to round off. Okay, Dibur Torah Klashon B'nei Adam, and that will come back to us when we do a gematria. Okay, next, the name of Moshe. Now you know that Moshe was probably given a name when he was born. Right, his mother gave him a different name, and the Gemara in Sanhedrin says he had 7 names. Avigdor, Yekusiel, Avisocho, and Tov is in a different medrash. That's not one of the... It's 7 names in a pasuk in Divrei HaYomim. And it says these were the sons of Bitya, who was married to Mered. And Chazal said that Mered was Kalev. It's a whole... backwards and forwards. I'm not going to read this one inside, but he goes out on a limb against something called the conservation of names. This is something, there's a chapter devoted to this in Yitzhak Heinemann's Darkei HaAgoda, where Chazal, and they do it in many different ways, where they say Eliyahu was Pinchas, or Tzidkiyahu was Yehoahaz, a different name, or Shalom in Yirmiyahu. This is done often, where Shifrin Pua, Yocheved Miriam, Ibn Ezra takes issue with a lot of these midrashim. He says these names aren't Moshe, and he actually says that Moshe is an Egyptian name. Okay, it's inconceivable, he says, that Paro's daughter all of a sudden started speaking Hebrew. All right, so, Amaya Mishisihu doesn't sound like Moshe in Egyptian, he points out. He offers that she spoke prophetically all of a sudden. But then he tells what the name should be in Egyptian, and then he talks about Moshe's name. And Tochkidei Dibur, and this is a very important midrashic point. He discusses what Chazal do with biblical characters and equating them with other biblical characters, and he takes issue with all of it. Okay, look at the last line, Gam Zetema, right after the word Meraglim, after verse 31, Gam Zetema imeinenu al derech sod. I question it all, unless there's some kind of secret here. Okay. When Chazal say that Pinchas and Eliyahu were the same person, there, that's an easy one. Pinchas and Eliyahu had the same characteristics, the same type of person. They both were zealous for God. But to say that Pinchas is Eliyahu is contradicted in many, many Gemaras. And Chazal, there's a Gemara that says that Eliyahu got up and said, I am from the sons of Asher. And in Yalkut Shimoni, there's a collection in Melachim Aleph of all the different shitas of what Shevet Eliyahu was from, about six different shitas where he was from. And one of them is that he was a Kohen. Okay, Tosfos in Bava Metzi accepted that one when it asked, how could Eliyahu save the child if he was a Kohen? Right, he lied down on a dead child and he saved him. He's a Kohen, how could he do that? Tosfos answers, if he lived afterwards, it's proof that he wasn't dead. But Tosfos accepted that he was a Kohen. So he says, unless it's a Derech Sod, I'm amazed at all this. That's Ibn Ezra talking. Okay. Now, let me move to the side. You see in my writing, I think the C was cut off there. It's supposed to be close reading. Close reading. Ibn Ezra was not a close reader like Rashi was. Okay, lost the C there. Ibn Ezra, while Rashi will carefully note, like Avram says, let me bring out bread, right? And then all of a sudden, there's no bread brought out. Not only is Rashi going to notice that the bread isn't there, he's going to tell you why it's not there. Ibn Ezra will say, Ibn Ezra or Rashbam in these cases are not such close readers, will say, come on, don't darshan out every little thing like that. Avram probably brought the bread out right away, or the Torah doesn't have to say what he obviously brought out, or if Lavan and Bisuel are constantly talking about Rivka going with this Eliezer, and all of a sudden Lavan is alone, so Rashi will say, ah, you'll not only notice that Besuel is not there, he'll tell you why Besuel isn't there. Again, Ibn Ezra and Mashbam will say, Besuel was there, he's just not mentioned for another reason. If Hashem tells the Zakenim to go with Moshe to take Bnei Israel and Mitzrayim, and all of a sudden the Zakenim aren't there, Rashi's going to notice that they're not there and tell you why they're not there, and tell you their punishment for not being there. Vintage Rashi to do these kind of things. Ibn Ezra and Mashbam are going to say, no, they were there, and it'll prove it from other places, and showing, enough said. Ibn Ezra was not such a close reader. He didn't nitpick like Rashi did. Right? That's obvious. Everyone knows that about Ibn Ezra. Ibn Ezra was preferred to nitpick in grammar and philology and meaning of words than to nitpick with the same kind of things that Rashi did. Okay, and about grammar, we discussed this earlier when we did Rashi. You know, Rashi didn't speak Arabic, so he didn't have the Arabic grammar books to use. Ibn Ezra read Chiyuj and Janach and even elaborated on them and improved upon them. So therefore, Ibn Ezra is very often the superior source for the diktuk points. So however, there are exceptions to this. Not necessarily. Rashi did know of Arabic, but not because he spoke the language. I mean, I can also tell you some things that Sadia Gaon said that without knowing Arabic, to know how to explain biblical words because of an Arabic term. I mean, ba'ava sotish yetamid, where the Rambam says you should be meshuga with God's love. And the Ravid said, who says you should be meshuga? And Rashi on the Pasuk in Mishle, where it says ba'ava sotish yetamid, Rashi says that in Arabic, meshuga means a strong asek. Ba'ava sotasok tamid is what it means. So that's what the Rambam possibly meant. So that can shed light on my understanding, even though I don't speak Arabic. So that's probably how, I mean, I'm just using one example. Rashi does quote Arabic often. Okay. All right, so then you get also the two-letter Shorish theory and the three-letter Shorish theory. Rashi believed that there were some words who have two or even one-letter Shorishim. Any time a letter falls out, in any, whether it's Nifal or Piel or whatever it might be, that letter couldn't be part of the Shorish, Rashi felt. Often, with some exceptions. Ibn Ezra always understood that that letters fall out, and that was part of the theories that Ibn Ezra read in Arabic. I can prove to you Rashi's theory, the two-letter Shorish theory, has strong basis in a lot of biblical grammar, but that's for a different class. Now let's talk about what I call parparaot. Ibn Ezra's use of gematria, notrikon, etc. From what I told you last week about Ibn Ezra, what will you think his approach will be to gematria? Very strongly opposed to it. The Torah doesn't speak the gematria. I don't take these things out of the pasuk unless I see it there clearly. And gematria is not clearly in the pasuk. So I take one case where he's very strongly against it. Take a look at the source at the bottom of page 4, where it says, the Cheshbon Osios Eliezer. You see that? It's number 22 is right on the side there. The Cheshbon, three lines from the bottom, the end of the line. You see it? The Cheshbon Osios Eliezer. Everyone see it? Derech Drash. The one who says that Eliezer means that there were 318 people, that's Derech Drash. Ki ein hakatuv medaber begematria. The psukim don't speak begematria. You know, there are halachas based on gematria, you should know. Alright, there are many gemaras that speak in terms of gematria. Yeah, nazir. Ki ein hakatuv medaber begematria, ki yachol harotze lautzi kol shem letov l'ra. Rak hashem kemashma'o. Then you can make any person, my daughter's name is Shoshana. Does that mean that she is destined to speak Lashon Hara because it so happens to be that Shoshana and Lashon Hara have the exact same gematria? And so does Esther. Esther was about a Malshenis because Esther and Lashon Hara both have the same gematria, 661. You're gonna say that. And it's just, the Sof. And if you look at some Perushim, notably the Rokeach or Yudah Chosid, that do these kind of things, you say, where are we going? As I mentioned to you last week, the Sefer Chassidim, the Rebbeinu Shmuel Chosid, the author of Sefer Chassidim, on the very first page in Bereishis, says, I never trust the person who makes clothes for a living. And no one else should. Why? I hope there's no one here who makes clothes. Why, he says, because in every day of creation, there is a juxtaposition of three words whose last letters spell the word emes, like Bereishis, Bara Elokim. Bereishis is tough, Bara is Aleph, Elokim is Mem. So you have Aleph, Mem, tough, emes. And that appears in every day of creation except on Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday. You don't have any juxtaposition of emes on Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday. Monday is Beis, Tuesday is Gimel, Wednesday is Dalet. Beged! Shouldn't trust someone who makes Beged. That appears in the very first page of Rabbi Dach, Perush Rabbi Dach Hasid Torah. Now, he might have felt that someone making the gun, and this is just a riot to it, but this is just going, how far are you going to go? Because if you read the parish of the Rokeach, who took the Rabbi Lachosin, his Rebbe, to the nth degree, the Rokeach's introduction to the Torah gives 63 different types of gematrias. You can go tired thinking of 10, but 63! So, they ain't a double soap for MS. Once you start and you open the Pandora's box, then there's in the double self. So what made Rashi say that it wasn't 318 men, it was Eliezer? Can you figure it out? Well, Rashi also knows that in the Torah, Medaberes Begematria. That 318 was not really 318, it was really Eliezer. All right, it's nice. It fits the coincidence that it's the same Gematria. Is that alone enough? You have to really say that it can't be just that. Because then Rashi will also in the Dover so. The point is that it's not the Derech of Torah, and this is what we started off saying here, to write a number like 318. The Torah would usually write 300 or 320 or 325 or 350. 318, if you find me another place in the Torah, we have 318. So the point that Ibn Ezra is convinced that 69 became 70 because it's not the Derech of the Torah to write 69. Do you think that 600,000 Jews left Egypt? 600,000, I mean, it says later 603,550, but it's inconceivable that exactly 600,000, at the moment they left Egypt, they were exactly 600,000 on the dot. It's rounded off. And 318 is a small enough number, but still, Rashi said it's impossible that such a number like this should just be taken out like that. And by the way, there are Rashis in the Torah, and I just came across one in Tehillim today, where Rashi darshins a pasuk in Perek Lamed Zion in Tehillim. And it says, the pasuk says that a small number of tzaddikim will destroy large numbers. And Rashi darshens it on the story of Bereishis Perek Yudalid. And it says Avraham with ma'at anoshim was able to destroy the four kings. Ma'at anoshim means 318 people. No question. And I can prove it in Rashi and Perek Yudalid and Bereishis also. In any event. That's what the source of this machlokes, and that's what Ibn Ezra says on gematria. Okay, let's move to page 5. You know the word Vayishakehu, the dots on the top of the word Vayishakehu by Esav? How would you explain those dots? What are they there for? Lack of integrity by the person. Chazal maintain that Meruba al Aksav, Aksav Meruba al Osios, there's a Gemara like that. If the Ksav Meruba al Osios, then you should read it as if though it really happened. If the Osios Meruba al Aksav, then the Nekudas Meruba al Aksav, then you should doubt the integrity of that word. You really didn't kiss him with a full heart. Get this. Avos to Rabbi Nassim, Perek Lamed Dalet, Mishnah Dalet says that when Eliyahu comes and tells Ezra that the word really belonged there, Ezra will say, fine, Eliyahu, that's why I wrote it. And if Eliyahu comes and tells Ezra, the word didn't belong there, he'll say, fine, that's why I put the dots there. Okay? In that tshuva, remember last week I mentioned the tshuva from Igris Moshe about that Teirush of Rida Chassid? In the second tshuva, after the person wrote in, showing him the sources of Rida Chassid and other books, Rav Moshe says this source has to be wiped out of the prints. He took issue with this source, he took issue with a few Ibn Ezra's, and he took issue with another Sifrei at the end of the Torah, and he said these are not real sources. My problem with that is that there were many Meforshim who commented on these sources. Why didn't they find it problematic? All right. In any event, look what Ibn Ezra does with Vayishakeh. Hadrash, now this goes to show you what Ibn Ezra thought about these kind of drushes. Hadrash on the kudos Vayishakeh, tovu la'atike mishadayim. It's good for those who are still nursing. Meaning for children. These drushes are for children, not for older people. Ki al derech ha-pshat lo ratza Esav la'asos ra lo'achiv. In pshat, Esav didn't want to harm his brother. I'm at the top of page 5. V'ha'ed v'yivku kasher asa Yosef in the chav. And the proof is that they were crying. They cried on each other. Shows that Esav really, really regretted not seeing his brother all those years. So, that goes against the Chazal also. That says that even Esav tried to choke him, he tried to bite him, all those things. So, Ibn Ezra shows you here that these kind of nice little parparaot are for children. Yet, I was able to uncover two places in Chazal, where in Tanakh, where Ibn Ezra does mention Gematria. How he comes out so strongly against it, let me show you these two. This one, you can sit there in your seat when you read this Ibn Ezra in Rus. Vayikke Eifa Sa'orim. When Rus first measured out an amount of barley to take home with her after she first met Boaz, it says she took an Eifa of Sa'orim. Pamachas Sha'aleni Adam Matam Be'Eifa Sa'orim. A person once asked me, why does it say that there was an Eifa of Sa'orim in that pasuk? Amar Tilo, Ein Tam L'Sheila Hazos. There's no reason for this. Ki akasuv siper mahaya oz, amahaya. The pasuk tells what happened. Oz na klosi be'enav. I've seen the light in his eyes. Ve'yomar li ki yesh lo ta'am v'ani yifrashtim menu v'lo sha'altiv. He said, I have a reason. And I started to walk away, and I didn't care to hear his reason. How does he introduce all this? He wants to show you that he's protecting himself. He says, I know what I wrote in Horatius in Gematria, but I have to tell you, I heard such a nice Gematria on Vayikeh Eifos Sa'orim that I have to tell my readers, yet I'm going to protect myself by saying that I heard it from someone else. I have no doubt that he did hear it from someone else. But whenever he quotes something inside, you give legitimacy to the person you're quoting, aren't you? So, it's obvious. So this is what he says. Vinei ba b'yom echad. So he came back to me. I have many reasons. Now again, I must stress, once this is in Perush Ibn Ezra, that means Ibn Ezra legitimized it. That she knows that one of her descendants, now she's not even married to Boaz yet, but one of her descendants will build a temple and make as its two foundation pillars call by the name of her future husband. Yachin Boaz are the two pillars of the Beis HaMikdash and Divrei HaYamim, and her husband's name was Boaz. So that's what does that have to do with Eifa? So let's look. She knew that one of her descendants will build the Beis HaMikdash with the name Boaz. V'tam Eifa tzadik vav rimonim shahayu al ha'amud v'zebe gematria Eifa. Look in Divrei HaYamim. It says the Yachin Boaz were two huge pillars that held up the Beis HaMikdash, And it says inside there that, that Shlomo designed it with 96 little, called achaporim, little mice. They're called mice because they were probably, shaped in the shape of mice. Little designs, you know, like you find in a stone, they put these designs around it. There were 96 of these surrounding the Yochin Boaz. And 96, figure it out, is the gematria of Ifa. Ibn Ezra's writings. Uperush Seorim Kimo Shiorim Kimo Sha'ar B'Nafsho. That that the explanation of Seorim he darshins as Shiorim that which surrounds the Nefesh, that which surrounds the Yochin Boaz. The Tam Acher Vayish, and he gives another explanation to Vayikir Posarim. Vayhi Shtei Milos Aramis Ivris Vayhi Kaashera Asa Sheyitla Avshalom Shehumi Baneha Vihine Kuf Im Alef Remez Lishnos Avshalom Bemoso. She says Vayhi means Vayhi Oyve, like it says in Vayhi Einu Ela Lashon Tzar in the Gemara Megillah. Ke'efas Orim. Absalom, according to Chazal, was 21 when his hair caught onto the branch. It says he was 21. Ke'efa se'orim. Picture it. Ke'efa, chof alos, 21. Yafe se'orim. Vayhi oyve to my son with beautiful hair who was killed at age 21. That's what he writes. The pshat of Vayhi ke'efa se'orim. Oyve, 21, chof alos, and you're left with yud pei hei and the word ke'efa se'orim. That's found in Ibn Ezra. Okay, so I just finished that on the outside. Now look at Zechariah, Paragimel Pasuches, Semach. Just look at the bottom. Gam ani asiti derech drash. Next to last line. Ki Semach begematria Menachem v'hu ben Amiel. What is he doing that for? In Paragimel and Zechariah, the name of Mashiach is Semach. Now you know why the Lubavitchers always named their children Semach. The Lubavitcher Rebbe's. So the Tzemach, it says, this person will build back Yerushalayim, etc., etc., and call him Tzemach. So he says that in the Gemara in Sanhedrin, it says that Mashiach's name is Menachem. So he says, what a coincidence. Menachem and Tzemach have the exact gematria. So what I did for you, I just pointed out to you that Ibn Ezra also knew, you know, when it was time to darshan. Like I mentioned 2 weeks ago about Rashbam, who questioned Drash more so than Ibn Ezra, yet he also knew how to darshan with Akedis Yitzchak, with the seven sheep and the seven times in history that Israel would be subjugated by the Plishtim, and the drasha by Sukkah, mentioned the whole sermon that Rashbam did by Sukkah. So these guys also knew when to darshan if called upon for it. Okay. Now let's look at these last two sources on Tefillin. Now these two sources on Tefillin shed some light on the two Perushim. Remember I mentioned last week Ibn Ezra wrote a short perush to the Torah and a long perush to the Torah. The short perush we have in our Mikros Gedolos to Bereishis, Vayikra B'mid B'dvarim, and open up any place, you'll see that in Shmos, Ibn Ezra takes up a much larger percentage of the page than in any of the other books. Needless to say, you know, when you find contradictions between Shmos and the rest of the Torah, which happens often, or where in Bereishis he says, look up this pasuk in Shmos where I explain what I said, and you look in Shmos, it's not there, because it's two different Perushim. Now, we have Perush Ibn Ezra to Shmos, the short one, published at the end of Moseder Rav Kook, and at the end of the Krinsky's edition, but we don't have the larger Perush to the other four books. Chaval, because it was written according to Eliezer Margoliot. I referred to this article I think last week, where he takes upon all the evidence over which Perush was written first. It's quite clear that the larger Perush incorporates a meeting with Rashbam. His larger Perush to Shmos, this person obviously saw the Perush of Rashbam. The shorter Perush, he proves, never saw the Perush of Rashbam. Okay, both have practically nothing to do with Rashi. Right. So, and you remember why last week, why Ibn Ezra had very little to do with Rashi, wasn't thrilled with Rashi's perush. Okay, now what he does between these two perushim is that in one he says that whoever says that tefillin, the pshat in tefillin is just a reminder, like a string around your finger, oh, it's kfira, it's like Christianity, it's allegorical interpretation, and it's horrible. Okay, And in the longer Perush, the one written later according to Margoliot, he mentions it. Who is the Rishon who says that Pshat and Tfillin is not Parshios and not Torah, but simply like a string around your finger to remember Yetzias Mitzrayim? Who's the Rishon? Rishbam. Okay, so afterwards he saw it and he refers to it. He mentions it. Okay, and then, he's strongly opposed to it, of course. Right, but this is the nature of the between the first two perushim of the two perushim sometimes are contradictory, and that's okay. According to Margoliot, they were written 40 years apart. He could have changed his mind about certain things. You know what his attitude towards Karaites between one perush to the other. In the short perush, he is so vociferous against any perush against Karaites, and in the other perush, he mentions them sometimes without even making fun of them at all afterwards. So, that happens. And he just gives them attention. In fact, I must tell you that a lot of Karaites, their Perushim, we only know because Ibn Ezra quotes them. So he changed his certain attitudes of his. Yes?
How would you react to this? A lot of times when Ibn Ezra is saying to you, you must keep shot, is really an answer to the Karaites, because if you're down shooting for the sake of Ramana, the Karaites said, you guys don't know any Hebrew. You have your own invention. So therefore, they go and say, we know Hebrew, but we also know Torah Shabbat.
Right.
That's, in other words, they wake up one morning and say, that's only talk shop. They're reacting to something. So that they're reacting to the onslaught, the Karaites do Hebrew.
That's and who's better than Ibn Ezra, the greatest philologist of that time, or at least of the Mefarshim,
to their own game that he's smarter than they are, but at the same time, exceptional.
Okay, and what's a better example to use for this than the very next source, Va'avadola Olam? Now remember what the Rashbam said on Va'avadola Olam. Kol Yemei Chayav, L'pip Shuto Kol Yemei Chayav. Says Vavadola Olam, he's a slave forever, and that's probably what a Karaite would do. So look what Ibn Ezra does in Vavadola Olam. Look at the third line, Shmos Chabal Pasuk Vav. That's on page 5, the very last source. Vavadola Olam. Yodanu ki milat la'olam b'lashon HaKodesh hu zman. La'olam does not mean forever in all cases, because it can't mean that. You want to live forever, become a slave, and work on after 6 years. You'll live for la'olam. It can't be that. So la'olam is a set time. Kmo kvar hayo la'olamim, pasuk in Koheles means zmanim. It's been that way for so long, for the longest time. V'yashav sham ad olam. Chana said, if you give me a son, I'll stay with you, God, ad olam, forever. Ad zman shiye gadol, until a time when he would be a zman misuyam. V'chein v'avado la'olam, and also here. Lizmano shel Yovel, she'ein zman mawadei Yisrael aroch mimenu. Can you accept this parish as pshat?
There's a Mark Twain where he says, if you want to be famous forever, and by forever I mean 30 years.
So, I mean, like you say, like a husband says to his wife, I love you forever. You know, why we should live forever? Let's do that first. So obviously, forever can be taken dibra torah k'lashon b'nei adam, which Ibn Ezra says all the time. Let me ask you this. Hachayim v'hamoves b'yad halashon. You tell me pshat in that sentence. Tongue doesn't have hands. So, you know, the Torah is going to talk in certain ways that l'olam doesn't mean 500 years of that, or even the rest of his life. L'olam is a set time that if you say 30 years or you say 50 years, whatever it might be, but in the Jewish calendar system you have days, months, years, and Shemitahs and Yovlos. And Yovlos is the longest one, so L'olam means to have him work ad olam until the longest countable time. So that's how Ibn Ezra learns Pshat, and then you see that he's more firm than the Rashbam on this. Because Rashbam wasn't afraid to tell you, albeit with an introduction in Shmos, in Mishpatim, to be sure, like we did last time, that I'll tell you that the Ikar are the drushas, but I'm here to give you pshat. You want to do drushas? Look at my grandfather. And I'll tell you, like in Parshas Tazria, Parshas Metzora, Parshas Truma, all about the Mishkan, all about leprosy. I'm not going to tell you anything new in Pshat. You go look at my Zayde. But everything else, I'm only here for Pshat. And I admit that the drushes are the Ikarit. Ibn Ezra is different. Ibn Ezra is not going to say something like that. Ibn Ezra will try by hook or crook to fit the Pshat into the Halacha, and if he can't, he'll say something like, Im Kabbalah Nikabel. Remember what I mentioned last week from the Safa Brura? That a woman doesn't inherit from her husband, that Gemara in Bava Basra, and how it derives it from a pasuk that seems to say that she does inherit from her husband. And Ibn Ezra just says there that Ki Kabbalah Haitabi Adam Sha'isha Reshet Ishto. There's a Kabbalah in the hands of Chazal that a man inherits his wife. And from a pasuk that seems to say the opposite. Let me ask you this. And the Gro was very, very strong in his association with Pshat also, as strong as the Rashbam. Because in the Gro's Perush Al HaTorah, he also writes, Kol Yimei Chayav on the pasuk Tavadola Olam. When you want to know how many days do you have to eat matzah on Pesach? It says many places eat matzahs for 7 days. But you know there's a drosha, 6 days, 7 days, 6 days. Rishus, 1 day is Chovah, Erev Tov Matzahs, not the others. But the Gros says, although he didn't make a bracha the 7 days, he said, who's going to tell you it's that the Rishus for six? Of course, it's a mitzvah gemura to eat matzahs for 7 days. You're going to take those psukim out of and rip them out of pshat? It says, Shivas Yamim. Then the Rishonim deal with the nafkamina between, and certainly many achronim, with why we make a bracha all the 7 days in the sukkah, but we don't make a bracha all the 7 days of matzah. But then there's a big sakratariya there. But the point is that look, the pasuk says this. You're going to rip out the 7 6 days of matzah's mitzvah. Okay, it's mitzvah legabe chova. Okay, it's not chova that you make a bracha asher kedushan yisav tzivonu, but it's certainly a mitzvah. So the gross shita on eating matzah for 7 days, he was certainly mechavev eating matzahs all the days. So, as opposed to others who were afraid of matzah matichametz, and they wouldn't eat other than the first night. Anyway, but so that just shows that there are, it's Ibn Ezra's way to take a Vavadola Olam and try to fit it the pshat into the halacha, to the point that when Ibn Ezra doesn't do that, as I mentioned last week, the Mefarshe Ibn Ezra, the scholars, view that not as an objection to the halacha pshat equation, but ignorance of the halacha. Okay, and I'm not concluding that. I'm just telling you that that's what's out there. That's usually the opinion with Ibn Ezra, because he's a stickler to make that equation, that when he doesn't, and that's the Truvas and Rishonim already, on the nature of Ibn Ezra's knowledge of Chazal and Shas, because there's some psukim where he just goes against the Mishnah. Look, Rashbam does too. But Rashbam at least apologizes each time he does it, in the beginning of that parsha. Okay, now let me just conclude on the major differences between Rashbam and Ibn Ezra on one side and Rashi on the other side, because next week when we do Ramban, it's a totally different story than the first 3 weeks we've been doing. Rashi is on the slightest provocation will darshan. And I'm purposely taking something, I am not, I forget now who actually asked it, but I'm taking a question that someone asked me last time on the pasuk, Vayehi ki zoken Yitzchak batichheno einav mir'os. Now Rashbam is going to say, why was he blind? Because the pasuk says why he was blind. He was an old man. You know what Rashi says in the pasuk? It's three perushim. Rashi says from the smoke of the women that Esav married. Two, from the drop of the angel that fell into his eye, and then he says, well, he was blind so that Yaakov could trick him. Shkocha Pratis. What made Rashi do this? That Rashbam said, Rashi, what do you do?
Why Rashi did
it? Yeah, why did Rashi do this?
Because Esav lived for many years after that, on the threshold of 100 babies. So he wasn't that old at that point.
He was certainly 120 something.
Yeah, 60 more years to go.
So he was a zaken at the, you know. No, it's true. Oh, because of that. Read the pasuk carefully. If the pasuk just means that he was old and blind, you tell me what the pasuk should have said. Vayehi ki zaken Yitzchak batichhena einav. Stop. But Tichheno Enov Meraos implies he was blind because he saw something. Batzichena enav, he was blind from seeing. What do you mean he was blind from seeing? Because he was blind from seeing something. And Rashi, give up, what a wonderful Rashi this is then. It tells you, what did he see that made him blind? So why does he say the smoke of the women? Because the very last pasuk was, Esav married these women. And Vos Matzi, who did they darshan out for some him, etc. So that's Smichas Parshis. And then he said, if you don't like that, because that pasuk was when Esav was 40, this pasuk is when Esav is 63, 23 years passed. He should have been blind 23 years ago. So that, I can't stick with that perish, right? You following me? So he gives you another perish, that he was blind all these years. And then Rashi goes into the Lashkacha Pratis, and it's not quite clear what, you know, he just wants to be, tell you, you know, if he hits it with the Olatz Mima, I'll tell you why this was the one exception, that he had to be blind for a reason, that Yaakov can take the brachas. So, but Rashbam is not going to be impressed with all that I just said. Because Rashbam didn't nitpick like Rashi. And I'll tell you, Rashi's derek was much more popular. I would rather do this. Okay, Rashbam on the pasuk doesn't leave it alone. I would have left this pasuk alone. Rashbam says, it's a chenin of Meroz because he was a zokin, and the pasuk says that. Okay? Next.
Okay,
well that's, you know what?
Physically blind.
Okay, I'll leave this.
Shout him out. Rashi gives him a full picture. You hear the band playing, you hear the music in the background, you see the whole.
I prefer always to take a picture and to show you what's there in the pasuk. That Esav did these things to his father is because the pasuk should have said, because he was a hunter. What is it? He tzayed b'fiv? He put food in his mouth? That's an unusual thing. So tzayed b'fiv is not b'fiv shol Yitzchak. Tzayed b'fiv. Yitzchak, Tzayed B'fiv, Shel Esav. Esav was a con man and with his mouth. That's where Rashi gets that he asked these questions. Okay, now let me get another example where Rashi is going to nitpick, and it takes a mental concordance, just a built-in concordance that only Rashi had, much more than Ibn Ezra, that in order to do this. And I might have mentioned this in the Rashi shir. On the pasuk, remember, Rashi should only darshan when there's provocation for it, right? On the pasuk Birchos Shadayim Borechem in the bracha of Yosef, there's no reason to darshan out any of those three words. Three simple words, and they're three whose explanation are simple in Tanakh. Rashi refers the word Shadayim to man's ability to father children. Take a look, it's a pele in Parshas Vayechi, the bracha of Yosef. Rechem means women won't be akaros. Birchos Shadayim means your men won't be a car, like it says in Parshas Re'eh. Yitzchak, Tzayed Befiv, Shel Esav. Esav was a con man and it was his mouth. That's where Rashi gets that he asked these questions. Okay, now let me get another example where Rashi's going to nitpick, and it takes a mental concordance, just a built-in concordance, so it's only Rashi had much more than Ibn Ezra that, in order to do this. And I might have mentioned this in the Rashi shir. On the Pasuk, remember, Rashi should only darshan when there's provocation for it, right? On the Pasuk, Birchos Shadayim Varechem, in the bracha of Yosef. There's no reason to darshan out any of those three words. Three simple words, and whose explanation are simple in Tanakh. Rashi refers the word Shadayim to man's ability to father children. Take a look, the Pele, in Parshas Vayechi, the Brach of Yosef. Rechem means women won't be akaros. Birchos Shadayim means your men won't be akar, like it says in Parshas Re'eh. Rashi, what made you do this? And Rashi shows how in Aramaic, Shin Dalid means Yerodi, Targum of Yerodi Yoren. He works it out. Why? The word wasn't an Agadah, a Mikra Shetzarech Yishuv to bring in an Agadah, right? So here is another example where Rashi nitpicks even more. And again, certainly Ibn Ezra and Rashbam aren't even aware of this kind of nitpicking, because they didn't have the mind to do it. Whenever Shadayim Varechem is used in Tanakh, mentioned five, and if you know, based on interpretation, six times in Tanakh, Rechem always comes first. And it makes sense. First, if it's going to Pshat, you bless the woman's ability to have a child, then it bless her ability to nurse the child. Right? But when you say Birchos Shadayim Varechem, and it's the only time where it switches the order, that's enough of a provocation to Rashi to Darshan. I am going to have to explain how Shadayim refers to something that precedes the woman's blessing of fertility, which is the man's blessing. Fertility precedes hers. Okay? So that's how Rashi, that's why Rashi does this. And that, once you get this picture of Rashi, you really get a sense of what they found disagreeable. They say, come on, don't do that. That's Rashi. But Rashi's going to say, no, I don't think so. Shout to me. And on Vayivla Matei Aharon et Matosam, where Ibn Ezra insists that it's a snake swallowing a snake, Rashi's going to, and it's not even nitpicking here, Rashi says, listen, I'm just reading the words. It says, Vayivla Matei Aharon et Matosam. A staff ate a staff. So Rashi maintains that a staff opened its mouth and ate another staff. That's it. Not a snake eating a snake. Alright? So that's the difference between Rashi and the others. Rashi will even darshan chaseres v'yaseres. Okay, v'hineis omim bivitna is missing the aleph and the yud. It's v'hineis somim bivitna. Rivka gives birth to tomim. Tamar gives birth to teomim, twins. You know what Ibn Ezra does in that pasuk? He says in Toldos, sometimes aleves and yuds fall out of pasukim. Why here? That's all he's satisfied by telling you that to omim, sometimes this happens. It's a phenomenon in Chumash. Okay? So, to Ibn Ezra, to Rashbam, the Torah can repeat itself. The Torah can be parallel. Remember, it was Rashbam I mentioned 2 weeks ago who was machadish, the idea of parallelism, of the Torah saying two things in a row without a chiddush. They both mean the same thing. When Rashi finds in Shmos, Paragal, Pasuk Yedzayin, Velo Shamu El Paro Melech Mitzrayim Kasher Diber Aleihen. What's the pasuk? Quickly. V'lo asu kasher diber aleihen Melech Mitzrayim v'techayena et hayeladim. The midwives feared God. They didn't listen to Paro and they let the boys live. Rashi says v'techayena et hayeladim means they gave them bread and water. They helped the children. Mapitom, did he get that from the pasuk? So Ramban really does something interesting there, but I'll get back to that afterwards. Rashi says, listen, what does velo shamu velo asu kasher diber aleihem melech Mitzrayim mean? The midwives didn't listen to Paro. What does that mean? They didn't kill them. So what does vatzachena say? They didn't can't mean that they let them live. The beginning of the pasuk means they let them live. So the end of the pasuk, according to Rashi, Sukkim never repeat themselves. And Rashi, the end of the pasuk is to teach me something new. Ramban says, even without that. But the chayena chayeladim means they did something positive. L'hachayot. The Ramban says, lo sechayek kol neshama, you know, the Ramban chita, that the seven nations are allowed to convert. Rashi says, no. You know, like in Kisete, he says, Kisete l'machamal aivecha, and you take a captive. Rashi says, that's a mechemes reshus, because in mechemes mitzvah, you don't take captives. Ramban strongly disagrees with that. He bases it on Pesukim and Nevi'im, and I'm going to do that next week, how the Ramban used Nevi'im much more in his Perush HaTorah than the other Mefarshim. So Ibn Ezra, a great Pashtun, a greater Darshan, and the greatest of all, the Balei Asodos in Perush HaTorah. So we'll continue with that next week, and I hope that now that you have an addition to Rashi, an appreciation of also the Pashtunim, Ashram and Ibn Ezra. And please excuse me, I know it's very late, but I didn't take up my full hour. I see the tapes aren't finished, but if you'll... 9 o'clock, is that okay? 9 o'clock on the dot. I have...